it's done.
Connor McDavid! It's not real!
The goal of the year?
Panarin!
Part of the past. The celebrations? Forgotten. The history?
Vegas Golden Knights!
History. We're back to a blank slate. Clean ice. All that matters now is what happens next. The Stanley Cup Playoffs.
Eastern Conference Final begins Wednesday.
Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
Welcome in Rose City to Soccer Made in Portland. Ryan Clark here with Chris Reifer on this Thursday, September 21st, 2023. It is a slightly cooler day than the day before. The days are getting cooler as fall beckons.
Fat times. It is fat times. Yeah, it is. It is phenomenal. This is the best time of year, folks.
Yeah, it is. This is what we live for right here is the September October range.
That's right.
Of weather in this city. A lot of stuff to talk about the last week or so.
Fat times in the soccer world too.
Yeah, seriously, fat times. We got a lot of games that have been played between the two teams.
And that have been won.
Yeah, that have all been won in the time since we last recorded. The Timbers with two wins in Austin and at home last night. Obviously a big, big win for them against San Jose. One that, you know, propelled them to a point of having won 4 of 6 under Miles Joseph. 4-1-1 under his leadership. And frankly, just looking like a completely different team. This was a team that, of course, if you're a regular listener of this podcast, you know that Chris and I, in our analysis, had pretty much written off
pretty close
at the point where right before when Gio was fired, and then obviously after that Houston game, it definitely felt like everything bottoming out to a point of no return. But the Timbers are not dead yet. They are very much in the playoff hunt, in the mix, in a very crowded and incompetent Western Conference, as we've talked about. But last night's win in particular was, in the words of Miles Joseph, one of their best performances of the season, front to back. And something that, you know, they can hang their hat on as they continue to work through a busy part of their schedule, which continues on Saturday against Colorado.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, I mean, it's been a marked difference between what we were seeing in sort of the last few weeks of Gio's tenure and what we've seen in the last few weeks in the beginning of Miles Joseph's tenure. And, you know, I think you've got to give Joseph a lot of credit for that. I think you got to give credit to the remaining staff, Liam Ridgewell, et cetera, for all of that in getting the team turned around. And I think you got to give credit to the players. It would have been pretty easy, I think, for them and across the board, basically, to kind of look at the situation and say, old boss is gone. Interim boss is, you know, a holdover from the prior administration. This isn't something that we're, you know, necessarily all that engaged in turning around. And frankly, I think that probably would have happened as many times as not in these sorts of circumstances. And to their credit, that's been the reaction has been the exact opposite. They really seem to have rallied around each other and rallied around Joseph and the coaching staff. And they've pulled out more results in the last couple of weeks than they had in the preceding few months. And that's why they are where they are today. Now, to be clear, they haven't made the playoffs yet. And even as we've discussed, merely making the playoffs ain't shoot. But, you know, I mean, they still very much stand on a knife's edge in terms of just sort of doing the bare minimum of getting into the postseason. And you know, I mean, they've had a little bit of a soft spot in their schedule the last couple of games. Austin's not a team that's playing well. San Jose also isn't playing well. Colorado hasn't played well in 2 years. And so, you know, I mean, they're in a soft spot in their schedule, but to their credit, whereas, you know, I mean, so even if, you know, they've kind of been flat track heroes over the course of the last few weeks, that's better than what they were previously, which was very often flat track roadkill. So full credit to them. I don't mean to take anything away from them in terms of by pointing out that the schedule has been pretty favorable recently, because they've won those games and that represents huge progress. But what that portends for the future, the track's going to get at least a little bit bumpier in the last few weeks of the season. I think it very much remains to be determined. And so it's time to start popping corks. Even if they went out, it probably still won't be time to start popping corks. If anybody's popping corks over finishing eighth or whatever, like, you know, I mean, maybe a beer. But not corks, not a corked beer. You don't get a nice one. You get like a can. But you know, I think it's progress, and it'll be interesting to see where they go from here.
I don't think I've ever seen a beer that has a cork in it. I know that.
Really?
There are,
oh, you got to shop around.
Is there beer that is corked?
Absolutely.
Or is it, I mean, it's like traditionally capped.
Yeah.
In my experience.
Yeah. There are lots of sort of premium craft beers that are corked.
Wow. I guess, you know, my experience with corks extends only to the point of wine, you know,
there's a whole new world of corkage out there that you are unfamiliar with, apparently.
My God, more corks. As if I needed that in my life.
But they don't get those beers even if they make the playoffs.
That's true.
I can't remember what the league, like Heineken or whatever. They get a Heineken.
I'm not a huge fan of Heineken.
I'm not either, but that's what they get.
No.
That's what eighth place gets. Eighth place gets you a Heineken. If you want something with a cork, you get in the top five. That's how it goes.
It's like, it's a beer.
Yeah.
But no, I agree with you. I think that, you know, they would like to get into the postseason, but I don't think they'd be satisfied by just getting in either. You know, I think that it would be a great achievement for Miles Joseph to get them in, period, given where they were. Given how deep the bottom got after that Houston game, you know, it's a lot of guys playing for their jobs. It's you know, Miles Joseph coaching for potentially being one of the major candidates. I think that he's shown that he should at the very least be given strong consideration based on the team's performance and his sort of tactical knowledge that has been on display in these games. You know, one of the great criticisms, I think, of Gio, especially in the last couple of years, was sort of the rigidness and the team's inability to sort of adapt, whether in game or over a stretch of games, right? And Gio would talk about making those adaptations, but often we wouldn't necessarily see it on the field. Now, whether that was a product of his coaching or maybe his ability to reach the guys or whatever it might have been over the years, It is tangibly different under Miles, right? I mean, they are tactically complicated, adapting, utilizing players creatively, even in situations where they're missing players. It is no longer an excuse that causes the traditional way of going about things to fall apart, but rather something that they make an adaptation to. Like, you look at, you know, obviously signing Brian Acosta in the first place was a big deal, but Brian Acosta's play and his role last night in that win was indicative, I think, of that philosophy, which has been consistent through the first six games under Miles.
And I was even more impressed with the way the central midfield worked in that game at Austin. That's not a central midfield that the Timbers would have succeeded with in the past, with Christian Paredes, Santiago Moreno, and Evander sort of in central midfield. That would have been overrun previously, and it wasn't. Against Austin, they had a little bit of a working into period in that game in the first half hour. But once they started to figure those things out, once they started to distribute a little bit wider and sort of go around Austin's press a little bit, then the game just flipped on its head and the Timbers pretty well dominated over the course of the remainder of that game. And so, I agree entirely. I am not ready to say that he should or will be a major candidate for the coaching job. And that's not even necessarily a reflection on Joseph. I think this is a club that is in near desperate need of new blood, and near desperate need of, you know, somebody coming in a prominent role who hasn't been sort of through the fires of the last few years, and who can bring a fresh start and a new perspective. They have not done that in the, you know, handful of other major hires that they've made over the course of the last year, either on the Timbers or the Thorns side. And I think that's pretty desperately needed. Would my mind change a little bit if the Timbers, you know, went out and ended up, you know, making a serious run into the playoffs? Perhaps. But that is kind of the level for me that he'd have to show. And, you know, it may well be that that Joseph proves that he either should be given a prominent role on the next staff here, or he'll prove his mettle enough to be considered for head coaching positions elsewhere. I think those are both very, very plausible outcomes from this. But, you know, unless he really knocks my socks off, and I'm not there yet, my socks are still on. But unless he really knocks my socks off with the turnaround and the way it finishes out, I think the need for a fresh perspective and new blood overrides, you know, even the strong work that we've seen from him and his staff to date.
Yeah, I just started putting my socks back on. It's getting colder now. I'm mostly a barefoot man around the house.
Put your socks on, people. It's disgusting.
Put your dang socks on.
Don't be the person that's like on the plane taking their socks off. Have you ever seen that?
Oh, it's God, like, yes, it's happened to me right next to
it
me.
Is
yeah.
Truly sociopathic behavior.
It's dangerously, put your socks on, people. Dangerously crazy stuff. Yeah, look, I think that's definitely a likely outcome, that, you know, Miles proves himself to be a top assistant under the next person, if he's not the hire. I think he would definitely have to do a lot to sort of edge out other names that the team might be looking at. You know, they've spoken privately that they're trying to attract big name coaches for this job, and that they're going to try to interview those folks. But, you know, so far it's just vague talk. You know, we haven't heard specific names floated yet for the job. And, you know, I guess it makes sense to a degree. They want to give Miles room to do his job and not create any sort of distractions, especially given how well the team has been playing the last few weeks. Yeah. So, you know, a lot to unpack there, and we will continue to do so.
That said, it's a decision that needs to be made fairly quickly.
Yeah.
Because they need to get that coach, whoever it is, in place so that they can work collaboratively with Ned Grabovoy and his staff on revamping the roster in the ways that it still needs to be revamped, and to give that coach the best opportunity to succeed in 2024 that they can have. And so that we don't have another situation like we have the last couple of years, where the Timbers stumble out of the gates while they're trying to figure things out, and then put themselves behind the eight ball and have to pull a rabbit out of a hat come September. That's where we are now. That's where we were last year. And I think they need to make that coaching decision early enough so that they have a full off season to get ready for 2024, so that doesn't happen for a third year in a row.
Four games left for the Timbers now. 30 down, 4 to go. They've got Colorado on Saturday at home. In
terrible
one that you got to
truly yeah,
terrible team. Got to get 3 points out of it, regardless of short rest, regardless of Paredes not being available due to the yellow card accumulation.
Christian
which
Paredes,
of course,
great game last night. Great game against San Jose. Truly, yeah. One of the dumbest yellow cards I've seen somebody get on yellow card warning. He got a yellow card for kicking the ball away after a foul. I don't even think he committed the foul. I think it was like somebody else, and he just walks up and kicks the ball away, and like, yeah, not a good moment. I'm sure that's one that he looks back on and thinks, you know, what the heck was I thinking when I did that?
Yeah, he sort of chuckled when I asked him after the game about it, because he totally realized the sort of, you know, lack of brain in that moment for him to and
those moments happen in, like,
yeah, that comes every now and then when you're playing, you know, the emotions sort of just like reach a certain level. It is what it is. Like, yeah. I don't fault his character for it. He's not a guy that's shown consistently that he's doing stuff like that.
No, and he's been playing phenomenally, and yeah. You know, as evidenced by the fact that he's been given the armband twice in the last few weeks, he's clearly taken on a leadership role. And I think you can see that in the way he's sort of not only asserting himself in games more, which he absolutely is, but also in the way he's sort of asserting his voice outside of off the field, that you can see his leadership, you know, him sort of starting to step into that, which is great. I mean, you know, all of the other marks for Paredes right now are glowing, except that one where you're like, ah, come on, man, what happened in that moment?
Yeah, it stinks for sure. But his performance last night was excellent. Yeah. I mean, him and Acosta were great together. But Paredes in particular, I think, has emerged as one of Portland's most important players. No and question. There's a reason why, you know, Ned didn't sort of accept the offers that were coming in for him, and that they went out of their way to sort of share with various media members privately, you know, anonymously, quote unquote. that they declined those offers because, one, obviously it makes the club look, you know, good because they assert themselves in a position where, you know, they are able to decline such lucrative offers, but it also, I think, is them going out of their way to show appreciation for a player who undeniably over the last several months, whether the team's been good or not, Paredes has been very good.
And I still think the Timbers are in a spot. I mean, look, we can't let the last 3 weeks erase what we saw over the course of the previous 6 months. And the Timbers can't do that, right? Ned Grabovoy can't do that. He has to consider what he's seen over the course of the next 6 months. And he still has to be in the mode of kind of making a list and checking it twice for who they think they want to keep and who they want to sort of have be part of the core going forward and who they're not going to keep. And sometimes those choices can be a little bit difficult. I think Paredes is clearly in the keep category, clearly in the keep category. I think they've made that clear. I was glad to see Acosta's performance against San Jose. Frankly, I thought he had had a rough introduction to Portland. I think a number of his performances to that point hadn't been very good, including at Austin when he came on in that game, was really among the most culpable players in giving up the goal that brought Austin back into the game late, as he just completely failed to track a run from, I think it was Driussi, kind of the guy on their team you got to track, right? And he just totally failed to track it, totally failed to pass him off, and he ended up waltzing into the box unmarked. And so to this point, I had been a little bit skeptical, maybe even quite a bit skeptical, of Brian Acosta and his ability to, you know, be anything more than a guy who's going to fill a hole here and there. He was a heck of a lot more than a guy who just filled a hole against San Jose. He was fantastic. Oh. In every phase of the game, he was fantastic. And I don't, you know, I mean, that could be one of two things, right? It could be a fluke. He had a good game, but is going to have consistency problems, and that's going to bite you. Or it could be a matter of him just getting more comfortable and getting acclimated and starting to find his role within the team and build that relationship with Paredes and with the other guys out there. I think the Timbers very much hope it's the latter, and, you know, they're going to need it to be the latter because he is going to be the guy who is going to be the anchor for that central midfield against his former team, Colorado. Would be nice to have a follow-up sort of revenge performance, if that's even a thing. It's usually not a thing, but a follow-up revenge performance against Colorado to show them what they're missing. I just made that a lot more dramatic than it probably deserves. But, you know, I mean,
that's our job is to create these dramatic narratives.
Drama. Narratives are everything when you do what we do. I think that's the hope, that it is a matter of sort of acclimating and getting worked into the team as a whole. But I also think it's too early to jump to conclusions about that, even though, I mean, the Timbers, he's got to fall somewhere on Ned's list, right? Whether he's a keeper or send away guy, and they don't have too much longer to make that decision. And so, if he impresses over the course of these next four games, he may work himself into a place where probably a new contract, at an appropriate number, he might work his way into the keep category, but I'm not ready to put him there. Certainly not in pin, after just the one performance last night.
Yeah, the central midfield is really the area, I think, of focus right now for this team, in what has changed about what they've been doing. I think Felipe Mora's play has been great up top. I think that the back line has solidified in a way that, you know, you can rely firmly on guys like Zach and Dario back there. Claudio Bravo, I think, has played better lately, but really the central midfield and how those players are being played and where they're being played is crucial. And Evander, I think, is among that
new guy, know,
that stuff. Yeah. Yeah. Like
new player in the last few weeks.
Yeah. He's been completely different in, you know, his approach. He's been different in terms of his positioning. They're playing him a little bit deeper. Yeah. His attitude has improved as a result too. Like he's still a legit playmaker, a very dangerous set piece taker, and somebody who can score a goal
extremely casually.
Yeah, very casually. Or he almost scored on like a little midair pirouette last night. So that was fed in from Blanca. But he's got finesse and style and skill and, you know, all these things. But the biggest difference in something that Miles Joseph actually spoke about after the game is the defensive work rate and his ability to get stuck in and be a guy that defends in space and makes a difference and wins balls for the Timbers. He was, you know, during the time playing for Geo, he was sort of a stand around and wait till somebody gets me the ball 10. And he wasn't running terribly hard in some of those.
And they were often not finding him with the ball.
Yeah. And they weren't finding him because, like, structurally, they just weren't able to build out of the back the way that they have been in these last few games. And so he's a different player. And this is, I think, the ideal usage of Evander and his skill set. Now, that does present problems for you down the line, questions about, you know, if you retain people like Eric Williamson or not, others who play his position that might make things a little crowded, you know, who have similar, you know, skill sets. They might not be the same players, but, you know, you have to keep that in mind. And so then now, are you starting to look at more of a true 10, you know, or are you going to sort of shift Santi into that role as he has, you know, not so quietly desired over the last several weeks? Like, the moving parts are interesting in more ways than just like who's going to be back and who isn't. That's obviously going to be a big part of the offseason, who they, you know, who they add, who they subtract from the team. But how guys are shifting around within the prism of the team is compelling.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, I think this is sort of just one of the rules of good soccer teams. It is extremely rare to find a good soccer team at the MLS level or any level higher that doesn't have a good central midfield. It's just kind of one of those things that you can't hide. If you have weakness in central midfield, you're just going to get eaten alive. And there have been times this year where the Timbers just weren't right in central midfield. I think the balance was all wrong early in the season when they were putting Diego Chara on an island and they had Williamson and Evander running together before Williamson got hurt. I think things were helped at times when Paredes was paired with Chara, but they still had issues sort of at that number 10 spot and figuring out how they were going to use it, how high that third central midfielder was going to play relative to the wingers and the number nine, and how they're going to defend with that third central midfielder. And I think it's just looked just visually so much better to me in the last few weeks, in the way Joseph's been doing that. And largely they've gone to exactly what you described, bringing all three of the central midfielders underneath the wingers, playing more of a true 4-3-3. Whereas I think the Timbers sort of flirted with things that were 4-2-3-1 and even at times 4-4-2 based, under Gio. I think it's been more of a true 4-3-3, and I think it's really worked. Now, there are issues with defending in a 4-3-3, especially. The Timbers have been benefited greatly over the course of the last few weeks by the fact that their wingers have still been pretty well stuck in defensively, especially when their side fullback for the opponent has been pushing on. And they've gotten that work out of Santi Moreno and Dairon Asprilla and Jimmy Chara and all those guys, which you really need. Because if you don't have that, the 4-3-3 and especially the central midfield really quickly turns into sort of an unbalanced defensive set that is pretty easy to overload. And they've done a good job of managing those situations and making the rotations and having the buy-in from their wingers to defend when they need to cover up those sort of just fundamental inherent frailties in the 4-3-3. But there's going to be a big question about how to do it against Colorado, right? You've got to figure that it's going to be that they're going to play Acosta at the six. And then I think it's likely to be Jimmy Chara and Santi Moreno. Joining him in central midfield would be my guess. And, you know, I mean, look, there's not a ton of defense in that. Certainly Acosta is capable, at least at times. We'll see how often those times are, of being that defensive presence. But between Moreno and Jimmy Chara, those aren't guys who traditionally have defended a ton. Certainly not nearly as much as somebody like Paredes would. And so whether they're going to be able to keep that balance in the game against Colorado is a question. Whether it's going to matter because Colorado is incompetent is another question. And, you know, I mean, those are sort of the questions moving forward. But I've been impressed with the way that that central midfield unit has operated over the course of the last few weeks under Miles Joseph. And I think that's a huge part of why they've been harder to break down. I think that's a huge part of why they've been able to spark a few more of those counterattacking situations, and they've been able to solve some of those problems mid-game. A lot of times when you're solving problems, it's because of intelligence in your central midfield. It's because your central midfielders who are getting on the ball in those post-defensive moments are figuring out where to distribute to, are figuring out where the spots to go are. And that's how you solve problems. And so I think that's been a huge part of why they've been better over the course of the last few weeks, and I hope to see it carry forward. Whether it will or not, I think that's what we've got to stay tuned to watch, knowing that the season still very much hangs on a knife's edge.
Speaking of strong central midfields.
Oh, my goodness. I know where you're going. This is a force of a central midfield.
The Portland Thorns with a 2-0 win over OL Reign on Saturday. A really strong performance once again against their rivals, a talented Reign team. That came in with a lot of emotion, knowing that it was Megan Rapinoe's final game in Portland as a professional, barring, of course, a playoff matchup. Really cool atmosphere at the game, and cheers for Pino when she came off, too. I think that, as an aside, that was just a really special thing to be able to witness. Yeah. And, you know, obviously, Pino means a lot to this city. The game itself, huge for the Thorns, not only in the tight table to regain the top positioning, but for confidence, for consistency's sake, and that central midfield led by Coffey and Rocky again,
dominant,
just purely dominant against really good opposing midfielders.
Yep.
It was no joke the performance that they put in,
especially in the first half. I thought the Thorns just ran rampant over the game, and it was a really impressive first half performance that put them deservedly, I thought, up 2-0. I can't say enough about the way the Thorns sort of kept the Reign pinned in. And a lot of that comes from central midfield. I thought both Rocky and Coffey were just phenomenal, as we've seen when the Thorns are good. And as we were sort of calling for when the Thorns were struggling a little bit, that double pivot seemed to make a lot more sense than sort of the 1-6 and 2-10s approach that they took during that period in which games were turning into track meets. I mean, this when that unit is working well, the Thorns are just so darn good. And that's exactly what we saw in the first half. And then and that's not to criticize the performance in the second half. I think the performance in the second half was exactly what you want in a game like that. They shut it down. They were up 2-0, and the Reign had a lot more of the ball in the second half, but they never looked keen to cut into that lead, let alone erase it. And the Thorns made darn sure that this game at 2-0 up wasn't going to turn into one of those track meets. That's playoff soccer right there. That's how you win these kinds of games. Yeah, it is so rare against teams of the quality of the Reign, or certainly of the quality of the Wave or Gotham, as they're about to see in the next few weeks, that you're going to take a game in September and have it be a runaway, a 3 or 4-0 or something like that. That just doesn't happen very often. Even when you play as well as the Thorns did in that first half, and I thought they were spectacular, you know, even if you can get your nose in front a couple goals like that, usually the game's going to get tight, and that's a good thing for the Thorns. And so overall, I mean, it's a massive win. It's a great performance. It puts it together with a couple of favorable results elsewhere. Really, I mean, a fumble from the Wave in losing at home. You know, those were huge points dropped by San Diego that have now, you know, combined with the Thorns' excellent performance and result against the Reign, make it so that if the Thorns win their next two at home, which don't get me wrong, don't think for one second I'm saying that's going to be easy. That's going to be hard. The Wave and Gotham are good, right? They are what, 2-3 in the table? They're good. And so those are going to be challenging games to win. But if the Thorns win them, they're the Shield winners. Win twice at home, and it's that simple.
Yeah, it's right in front of the Thorns now. They're in a position where they win these two games, they win the Shield, and that Angel City game doesn't matter as much. But at the same time, you know, given that you're going to have a bye in the first round in that scenario, you'd expect a pretty full team to play in that game, particularly if Sophia Smith is sort of working her way back to full health. That's key for her for sure.
And Angel City's been playing better, and so that is a very tricky game. Or at least a very tricky looking game, if it turns out to be meaningful for the Thorns in terms of the regular season standings and that finish. So, you know, it's going to be hard to do, but they would very much like to package the Shield in the next couple at home.
Yeah, and to win it on your home field too. I mean, you know, they put themselves in a position where they could celebrate being Shield winners at home in front of their fans in a game against a really good team in Gotham. So, you know, a lot to be done before then, but this performance I think is indicative of the Thorns being on that track of being capable of, despite the quality of the two teams coming in, of pulling out those two wins. We talked about central midfield, we talked about Coffey and Rocky, and both of them were phenomenal. The ball from Coffey in particular that went into Rodriguez, who played it to her left to Sugita for that first goal, was, as usual from Sam, just an otherworldly set piece ball. And Rocky with such a heady play to leave it for Hina. Not every player would do something like that and not try to take a whack at the goal herself, which would have been a tougher angle, you know, than obviously just leaving an easy one for Hina. But Morgan Weaver is the player that I really want to highlight from that game, and somebody that, you know, with Sophia, with Sam Coffey, is to me among the MVP candidates in NWSL this year. She has, you know, she has.
Will they hurt each other?
They are hurting each other. Look, if she was on a team that didn't have Sophia Smith, I think Morgan would be one of the favorites. But I think now, you know, you could see her placing like fifth in the voting. And Soph winning it. I think regardless of the fact that Soph has missed these games, she could miss the rest of the season. And I firmly believe that Soph should repeat as MVP. And Sam is somebody that, once again, if she were on another team, would be absolutely in that conversation as well. In the way that sort of Lindsay Horan won MVP for the Thorns several years ago. That type of player who makes such a massive impact. It's what happens when you're,
she's like the Angela Salem hipster MVP pick. The year that Salem just absolutely dominated for the Thorns and was phenomenal. She was like the hipster pick for MVP. That is Sam Coffey this year.
Yeah. The beanie wearing, coffee drinking, for lack of a better beverage, coffee drinking people in the world,
beer with a cork,
you know, those folk twirling their handlebar mustaches. They're
exactly,
they're right. Telling us that's, well, actually I think Sam Coffey should be the MVP of the league, and by no means am I belittling that. I think that actually is a valid argument that one could make. The problem is Sophia Smith is a Titan and has dominated all season and is putting together an incredible statistical campaign regardless of her injury. And when she comes back in the regular season, which looks likely at this point, but we'll see.
You just made me very nervous.
Yeah. There. No.
Don't.
No, I won't.
You're not reporting anything.
I'm not,
to be clear.
I'm not reporting anything. I won't go either way. I won't go the pessimistic or optimistic route. I will say that, given how they described it as mild, given the amount of time she's had between the injury and this upcoming San Diego game, this is the first one where you genuinely can wonder if she's going to be back. But regardless of whether she comes back or not, to me, she's the MVP. And, you know, it's great to play with somebody like that. But also, I think people like Morgan and Sam sort of suffer for lack of credit because of being on a great team and because of being on a great team with great individual players like Sof.
And Weaver has been just enormous in keeping the Thorns afloat in the attack while folks like Sof and while folks like Crystal Dunn have been out as a result of the World Cup or now Smith's injury. And so, yeah, I agree that there are a lot of circumstances in which there would be a pretty credible Morgan Weaver for MVP campaign. I think, you know, I think any of them, including probably Smith, can most be helped in their MVP campaigns by the Thorns going out and winning the Shield. If the Thorns win the Shield, I think it's going to be one of them. And I think I know which one of them it is. It'll be Sof.
Yes.
Not to spoil it, but kind of to spoil it.
Yeah, spoiler alert. The Thorns made a signing, if you can believe it, with three games
weird
left
timing.
In the season.
Weird timing.
You know, finding ways within the NWSL rules to bring somebody in, and forgive me on the pronunciation, Rika Siveka. She is from Denmark. That was my attempt at speaking with a sort of Danish flair.
I won't correct you, but somebody else might.
Yeah, she would. She wants to just go by Re, so that'll be easy enough for folks than what I attempted there. But she's somebody that's a center back, outside back, versatile defender, 27 years old, played in the WSL for Everton for 3 years. Genuine like depth and experience that, you know, adds to what is already, I think, a strong position group for the Thorns. But, you know, with the expansion draft coming up this offseason, with, you know, questions about like how many minutes can you play Becky Sauerbrunn in the playoffs without, you know, running her into the ground too hard and trying to be safe with her injury, coming off of a heel injury, which is like one of the worst possible places to have an injury as a soccer player. You know, it's a good signing and something that I think that, you know, Karina LeBlanc would have probably liked to get done earlier, just to have more time for Ree to sort of show herself in the last few games of the season and have that trial run. But at the same time, she's still going to be there for these three big games. She might see a few minutes here and there. And she's an insurance policy in a lot of ways too. And it ties directly into that expansion draft where the Thorns, you know, as talented and deep as they are, they can only protect 9 players. And you got to think, given the talent and depth of this Thorns team, a lot of these players who are not protected are going to be poached inevitably, whether it's, you know, older, more experienced and veteran players that
they
are
big
names.
They can only lose one, right?
I don't remember.
In the expansion draft, is it one or two?
It may be multiple. I don't know off the top of
my head. I don't think they can lose more than one or two. Usually if you get one or two taken, then you're protected. The rest of your roster is safe.
That would be ideal for them. For the remainder. Yeah. But so either way, you know, you think about Mangus being out of contract, Becky Sauerbrunn being out of contract, both Portland people through and through and people who love this team, but there are opportunities that could pop up for either of them elsewhere, or they could step away from the game. We don't know at this point.
Yeah. Just the timing makes it weird, right? I mean, you know, three games left in the season, they're all extremely high leverage games at this point. You kind of have to plan that way. Maybe the third one becomes less so if you win the next two. But, you know, I mean, you sort of have to plan as though they're all really high leverage games. And those are just difficult games to bring somebody new into, especially in a position like center back. So, you know, the timing is strange. The contract that she signed for the remainder of the 2023 season guaranteed and then has an option for 2024. So, I mean, ordinarily you'd say that kind of a signing would be like, okay, well, the next few weeks are basically a glorified trial, right? Sort of a, we'll see what's there. And if there's something there, we'll bring it back for 2024. I'm not even sure there's really that much of an opportunity left to have that kind of a trial. And to sort of get those sorts of opportunities. So this may be one that they're kind of thinking, yes, we are going to exercise the 2024 option. And that's a little bit of a foregone conclusion. But, you know, for mechanics reasons, and to be clear, we don't know. There's a lot we don't know about MLS rules. There is a lot more we don't know about NWSL rules. It is basically a total black box. But there might be just sort of reasons, hashtag, why that option is there, but they are nonetheless planning on exercising it, or they're just planning to assess her primarily in training. But it's strange timing. It's extremely late in the season to make this kind of a signing, which, you know, you would ordinarily expect to be, if not a starter, a rotation player, just given her international pedigree and experience in really credible leagues abroad. But, you know, I mean, there's just not a lot of time to bring a player like that in. So yeah. We'll see how it ends up playing out, but it's a little bit of a head scratcher in terms of when it's happened.
There's a lot of things that go into, you know, finalizing these type of deals. You know, you think about what happened with the Timbers last year with Juan David Mosquera, somebody that came in pretty much at the tail end of the year. And, you know, he showed himself to be a really talented and important player that this year has been great for them. Different sort of player. Obviously, you know, he was really young when he came to the Timbers. Ree is sort of a veteran player that you're kicking the tires on after several strong years in the WSL. For those who are curious, I guess, about how the rules apply in terms of the signing, I was actually able to figure out what the rule was that allowed for this to happen. Yes,
I am here for NWSL rules content.
Despite the lack of transparency that exists with the NWSL with regard to so many rules and policies, the one that applies here, and the reason why Karina LeBlanc and company were able to do this, was that she was out of contract from Everton during the most recent transfer window, which ended obviously weeks ago. Because of that, because the fact she was out of contract during that window, she could be signed at any point essentially after that window. And the signing didn't get across the finish line until basically now. They had been working on it obviously for a while, but you know, there are things that go into it, you know, the negotiation with agents, you know, the travel and the visa system, the archaic American immigration system that is always creating hurdles for people. There's a lot of factors there. And it sucks that obviously she wasn't be able to be here earlier in the season to have a longer trial run, but she's here and she's somebody that adds depth and a sort of insurance for this postseason run. And from what I've heard, she is in love with sort of the Thorns organization and what they represent for women's football sort of on a global stage. Like, she came to the game against OL Reign and watched it from, I believe, a box seat and was blown away because obviously there were 25,000 people here and it was an amazing atmosphere. But you know, that even in the WSL, a lot of times they aren't necessarily getting those type of atmospheres and sort of feelings around the clubs, but she was enamored with it. And I think people like that who can maybe factor into the long term as sort of culture fits, that's a big deal for the Thorns, regardless of how it sort of shakes out in terms of personnel.
Yeah, and hopefully she sort of steps right in and is able to make an impact, at least demonstrate through training or otherwise that she's going to have a place in the team going forward. I think that's the hope. I think just from the outside, it's a little bit difficult to know sort of what to expect. Just because of the timing and the nature of the contract and the like, this could be somebody who is here for a few weeks and we never hear from again, or she could become somebody who's a mainstay and is here for quite a while and could be a central part of the 2024 Thorns. Who's to say?
At this point, shrug shoulders. We got three games left now for the Thorns. This game against San Diego on the 30th, the game at home against Gotham 1 week later, and then on the road at Angel City 8 days after that on October 15th. Then it's playoff time, baby. Then in all likelihood, the Thorns will have a home game to essentially get into the championship. But given how tight everything is, nothing is set in stone yet. Obviously, things going the opposite direction mean a far more difficult path for the Thorns to repeating as champions. The window for building the dynasty is something that we have sort of talked about before. I think it may be more limited in certain respects in the short term than folks might think, given the dominance on the field the Thorns have experienced, because they're in this coming off season could be a number of changes and potential retirements or departures or whatever that, you know, change the sort of veteran nucleus of this team. You think about players like Mangus and Sauerbrunn being out of contract. Now, I'm not saying necessarily that, you know, I've heard one way or the other that they're, you know, going to be shipping off, but, you know, Crystal Dunn is out of contract too. There's veteran players on this team who, Christine Sinclair, she has not announced her retirement, but I would think that she's probably got one more year with the Thorns, barring any sort of surprise there. And I'd be shocked if she went to play for another club in her career. But you have this young core, you have this, you know, incredibly talented young core in Sophia Smith, Sam Coffey, Morgan Weaver, and the like, you know, Bella Bixby factoring into that mix as well. That to me are the no doubters when it comes to protection in the expansion draft, as we talked a little bit about off air. But those veteran leaders and sort of what they mean to the nucleus of the club is significant, and finding a way to navigate not only, you know, potentially losing one or more of those players in the off season, but also, you know, hanging on to and extending with big dollar bills, the players that you have, like Soph, like Sam, like Morgan, that is essential. I think they did a good job, you know, locking in a player like Reyna Reyes after a strong rookie year. And she seems, as some people had put it, like the heir to Kling on the outside back spot. You know, Kling is probably got another year or two herself, but, you know, Reyna fits right into that timeline, and doing that, you know, making sure that they navigate the sale well enough to lock in those contracts that are being negotiated
and soon enough.
Yeah. Especially Soph's, because, you know, we've talked about it. Soph has 1 year after this one left on her deal. And that's the big one that you circle a million times over with a big red marker. So
can't let her enter a contract.
Yeah.
Absolutely cannot do
that. But the others are crucial too, for sure.
The others are crucial. But you know, I mean, I think it that is sort of the point, though, which is the reason I think you can make the claim that the Thorns may nonetheless be able to sort of carry over. There's always bumps when you're sort of in a generational transition, but there's reason to think that a generational transition for the Thorns could go as smoothly as it possibly can because you have that core. I mean, my goodness. If you're able to lock down for multiple years a core of Sam Coffey, Morgan Weaver, and Sophia Smith, you're going to be good. Like, that's, there are not many teams in the league that can match up player for player with that core. And that makes it a lot easier to put pieces around them to help them succeed and to build out the team. So, you know, I agree that they are definitely going to have important players to replace over the course of the next few years. Crystal Dunn's a phenomenal player. Becky Sauerbrunn's an amazing player. These aren't hot takes. And they're going to have to find people to step into those roles, if and when they leave, whether it's after this year or next year or when they retire. But it's a lot easier to do that when you've got Sam Coffey, Sophia Smith, and Morgan Weaver locked in for the long term. And so I think that's why, for me, that is, I mean, getting that core bought in and locked in contractually for the long term is a nearly co-equal task to going out and building a training facility for the long and I guess medium term health of the club.
Right. And you know, the sale is something that, you know, obviously lingers in the back of everything. Right. And is expected to be
not even in the back. It's like in the front of everything.
Yeah. It's right? Well, when a lot of people who pay attention to the Thorns casually on the outside think of the Thorns, they're thinking about the sale right now. Right. They, you know, other NWSL fans who are not necessarily watching every Thorns game, but might be keeping up casually, that's probably one of their first questions. And at this point, we are where Jessica Berman said we were about a week or two ago. And that is that, you know, it's expected to be completed by the end of the year. We don't know the name or names of the principal owners or ownership groups. At this point, it's a big question mark, and who those people are and the position that Paulson and company put them in to sort of hit the ground running on that training facility is big, but the personnel thing is just as big as you said, you know, locking those players in and building, what Karina LeBlanc has talked about as a global brand, as the epitome of what women's football should be on a global stage, competing with great clubs around the world. It's here for the taking. Absolutely. Yeah. Despite all of the BS that the players have had to go through over the last couple of years, having to answer for all of these things that were not their fault and endure the stress of dealing with all of those issues and power through and experience loss and heartbreak and the pains of, you know, trying to establish yourself in this way. There is greatness to be had here. And that's, I think, a really exciting thing for fans to watch, but it's a fraught thing too. And it's possible for those things to not go that way. So you have to sort of appreciate them as they come and just sort of, you know, clench your fists and hope that everything, if you're a fan, hope that everything works out.
And the, you know, I mean, in many ways, the ownership transition is going to be kind of the mystery first domino that's going to determine how everything else falls from there. And you know, that includes all the questions that go into that, right? When, who, how much are they going to invest in the team? Like, you know, I mean, it involves all of those things. And we don't have answers to any of them. And so as we look at these pressing issues around the club, including locking in this core of players and building out a training facility and you know, managing this generational transition that is unavoidable regardless of whether they re-sign some of those players to new contracts for next year. It's just going to happen in the next year or two as a matter of time. You know, those are all, you know, will be substantially affected by the new ownership, the approach that they take and how much they invest and all of those things. So, you know, I very much see figuring out that question as kind of in many ways in the foreground of all of these other issues that we've been discussing with the team.
Next game for the Thorns, Saturday, September 30th against the San Diego Wave. That's at home at 7:30 over at the park. I'll be there. I will not be at the same time watching the Portland Timbers on the road at the LA Galaxy, although maybe I'll have it up on the laptop as sort of background just to see how it's going. I won't be writing on that, of course. But you know, you can continue to follow my work and our podcast on OregonLive.com. You know, follow us on Twitter at SoccerMaidenPDX, at Chris Reifer, at Ryan T. Clark, like, subscribe, do all the good stuff. Chris, any parting thoughts here, good sir?
Nah, I think I got them all out.
Good.
Feel pretty good about it.
Feeling good. We're feeling good on a Thursday, folks. So thanks for joining us, and we'll see you next time.